tuned to Keldabe Talk Radio, the official podcast of the Mandalorian Mercs. We're a costume organization dedicated to charity efforts around the globe, attending events in Mandalorian armor we've built by hand. Here on the show, we'll keep you up to date with the latest fan community news. Visit our website at www.mandalorianmercs.com.
Hello and welcome to this month's edition of Keldabe Talk Radio. I'm your host, Crow, and with me on this edition is Thaxos.
Hey.
Frost.
Hello.
Dark Hiram.
All right.
And our special guest this month, our new Brigadier, Vraiden.
Hello, thank you for having me.
You are welcome. Thanks for coming on. So, all right, so yeah, Yes, we're very happy to have you. So let's actually just start with you. What brought you into the Mercs in the first place? We'll get into what your current duties and roles with the brigades are now, but what got you hooked into the Mercs in the first place?
I first met the Mandalorian Mercs at Celebration 6 in Orlando, and it was 2012, and that was the first big convention that I had ever been to, and it was 4 days of wall-to-wall Star Wars, and my wife and I flew down and we stayed in Orlando. We stayed with some friends that were there, and I drove down every day to the convention. And, you know, I had never been to anything of that scale. Because I'm older than you guys, but when I was young and in high school and in college, cosplay wasn't really a thing. I mean, there were the Trekkies, which people would stuff into lockers. And there was SCA. And people left the SCA people alone because they had swords. but there wasn't like this.
Still a good plan.
Well, hey, I'm all for it. But there wasn't just this culture of cosplay that is around now. And as I was walking around, I just thought, oh, this is great. I wish this had been around. And there also wasn't the internet, you know, because now if you want to build anything, you know, you go on YouTube and there's a tutorial to build it. And so I was walking around Celebration and I saw all the other costume groups, you know, because the 501st was there and the Rebel Legion was there and I think Dark Empire was there. But I ran into the Mercs setup and it was just amazing. And I loved seeing the customization that the club gives the members. And that's what appealed to me because, you know...
For those of you who don't know, that was the first year we had our speeder. This is the original mm-hmm. speeder. And we had the first year of our bunker.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. And the display was great. And there's a part of me that, you know, I wanted to join the 501st. I've since done so. But, you know, if you're going to be in the 501st, you need to look like a Stormtrooper or Darth Vader or whatever. And to see the Mercs set up there. And to see everyone in all their different colors and all their different styles, and everyone was very individualized, but you could tell that they were all together. You know,
Mandalorian Mercs taste the rainbow.
That's right. And then I went to Celebration in Anaheim, and you know, there were, instead of just a couple hundred, I don't know how many Mercs did we have in that photo? 300, something like that.
Quite a few.
A lot. Which one? C6?
C7.
No, the one at Anaheim.
Yeah. Quite a few. We filled those stairs. Yeah.
We filled that staircase.
Yeah.
You know, and I there are the Boba Fetts and the Jangos and the canon characters, but like I said, I love the customization, and so I went home from Celebration and I logged onto the forums, and then I kind of hit a wall because I had never done anything cosplay related. I'd never built anything. Worked with Sintra or Metal or anything like that, and so I lurked around the forums. I didn't post anything, and then I went to Dragon Con the next year. And after Dragon Con, I met some of the Mercs there, and I talked to some of the guys from the Rebel Legion and the other stuff that goes on at Dragon Con. And when I got back, I bought a helmet. And once you buy a helmet in the Mercs, you're probably in. Right.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And I bought an NME medium stalker because I knew I just had to have it. And after that, I just started building. And I was the only at the time. There were no other Mercs in West Virginia, and the clan closest was Blue Moon Clan. And there was one of the members of Blue Moon lives across the river from me over in Ashland, Kentucky. And he and I got together and we worked on armor. And in March of 2014, I got through the approval process and I joined Blue Moon Clan. And then after a couple of months, I did a bunch of troops with Blue Moon. I was Rusalor for like a month. And then in West Virginia, we had a couple other members transfer into the state. We had a couple people come through the approval process, and we were able to form a squad and eventually form our own clan. And when they said, who wants to be squad leader, I didn't go not it fast enough, and it became me. Yeah, you know how works, that happens. Right?
That's basically how that goes, yeah.
To be a hero, you just have to be the only one who doesn't stand back.
or you miss the staff meeting and they elect you. And so we had our clan in we had the Black Mountain Guard in West Virginia, and we formed in late 2014 as a squad, and in 2015 we became a clan. We had our seven members, and I was Alarad of that. And I love Star Wars. I love what the Mercs do, both at building and in terms of costuming and in terms of the charity work. And then last year they had the announcement that the Brigadier position was coming open, and a couple people asked me if I was going to apply, and I did, and I for some reason they picked me. So
it's almost like you had qualifications or something.
I know, right? I wouldn't say that, because I don't know who else applied. I'm very humble.
I'm not saying anyone else didn't have qualifications. Well,
but yeah, I figured they'd go with someone who was more experienced with the club, because like I said, I've only been, it's 2014, so a little over 2 years now, and you know, some of you guys I've been around since, you know, 07, 08 or so.
It was actually the position we'd had the most applicants for.
Really?
In all of the time. Now, I'm not sure if that's because the club is growing and we finally have such a large number of people, we get more applicants, and maybe we'll see that with the next council position when you get to vote on someone coming in. But it was a very tough decision, because we had quite a few excellent candidates, so there was a lot of discussion going on.
Well, like I said, I am very humbled that I was selected for this position.
We're glad to have you.
Well, I just hope I can continue to build on what Slade, Kel, and Rakim did coming into this year. So we'll see. Well, so either Brandon, we'll do well, or you guys will sack me.
Brandon, I can say, as your former Alarad, I highly, highly believe that you're going to do well in that position. You know, I knew when I first met you and when I put you in as a Rusalor, you know, I knew that you were going to annex off into West Virginia, and I wanted to kind of help get you behind the scenes to get an idea of what goes on. And then once you took over, you made that clan just explode with growth and prosperity. You did such a good job there. And to see you move up to a council position, I got to say, I am so proud of you to know you and to be your friend. And I really think you're going to do a good job in that position.
Well, thanks, Star. I appreciate that. And, you know, Blue Moon will always be my first home in the Mercs. I mean, that you guys were my founding clan, the clan that I joined first. And I'll always consider it my home.
That was very, very sweet. Honestly, well, that's awesome, and yeah, I don't think you need to worry about getting sacked at all. Like, it's very rare that we sack a council member. We usually just slowly grind the will to live out of you. That's usually how it works.
Joking aside, typically, I don't think there's been a single council member actually who was asked to step down. Every single one of them have gotten to the point where they realize they can't keep up, and it's better to let someone new take over. So,
yeah.
So, and, you know, I think that's a great
sign. It's quite the job.
I think that's a great sign of the growth of our club when our leadership knows that they're no longer providing the service of their position. When they step down, not only is that a sign of aptitude for them, but it also shows that our club is outgrowing itself exponentially, and it shows that we need fresh blood to constantly circulate through the leadership. So, to me, I think it's just interesting to see the growth and how that all comes together.
Well, yeah, you're right. The club has grown. I mean, I joined in 2014. My number is 876. And what are we up to now? 1650s?
Just about, yeah. Somewhere in there.
I mean, so that's almost double the membership in 3 years.
Blows my mind.
From 2007 until 2014, you know, there were all, you know, just under 900 members, and now we're almost 1700.
It's been one heck of a ride.
Yeah. Let's see. Actually, as of November 29th, we are at 1657. That is super freaking impressive. Like
it's been one of those things. I think I was member number 23 or 27.
Yeah.
And yeah. It's
amazing.
It's been crazy. Every year it's like a 50% growth rate.
Yeah. Cuz well, 2 years after you joined up, I joined in and I was 253.
And then
when we hit 500, I was like, wow, I've been here for a while. And now we're at 1650 something. And it's like, okay, I'm old.
Well, and I remember back when we blew 1,000, and I was like, I don't know, man, this is kind of small potatoes. 501st just hit 10K, right?
501st, but they've got 10 years on us.
Yeah, but they're now up to like 15K. So
but they still have 10 years on us.
No, I just meant that, like, that should tell you how fast these groups grow.
Oh, yeah, in exponential growth. Totally.
Yeah.
Well, because you've got every time you get a new clan popping up or a couple individuals popping up in a new country, there's that entire country's population to tap the potential from. You know, even if it's just a slim fraction of a percent of a percent of the total population.
Have, like, 15, 20 Russians now? Like,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of Russians.
Oh, yeah.
And that clan's only 2 years old?
Yeah, maybe? Like, it blows my mind. I remember when the first Russian person joined, and I was like, oh, that's pretty neat. We're getting out behind the Iron Curtain. And then suddenly there's a million Russians.
Yeah.
I remember when, I think he was their Allerad at the time. I can't remember, but there was one of the Russians came to Celebration Anaheim.
Yep.
And, you know, Anaheim being Celebration and all mind-blowing itself, you know, I'm one of the older guys. I'm 220. I mean, I came in at 2009. And to see that we have gotten so big that, you know, now that we've got Russia of, you know, it blew my mind because I never even thought that Russia had a huge cosplay scene. Like, I don't know anything about Russia to know enough.
You thought wrong, buddy.
I've seen that video. Trust me, I know I thought wrong, but it blew my mind. And to me, it shows how big we've become. We've become so global, and that family mentality that our club has. It stretches all the way around to Russia and Europe and all over. And it just, how big we've gone from being like primarily American UK club to a global club. I mean, that is a huge accomplishment. I mean, even just thinking about not even comparing ourselves to the 501st and their 10 years on us, but the fact that we finally made that point of global encompassing, it's just phenomenal to me.
Right, and especially since this club is a niche club. I mean, let's face it,
because
we only do Mandalorians. You know, how many hundreds of costumes does the 501st do, or the Rebel Legion, or some of the others? And to me, that's just impressive, and it speaks to the family environment that I stepped into, and that I hope that we can, both within my clan and in the brigades, that we can continue. To continue to grow in the community.
Yeah,
it's definitely, we're unique in just the way that we do everything. And some of that was by choice, some of that we just landed that way. And it's just so nice to see. And it's just so nice to see the way this club has grown. Because, like, I think I joined in, late 2010. I was in the 400s. And Wampa Clan was only like four or five members. It was just at Clan.
I think it was you, Bio, and Mareel, and
Tal and Arden.
I was about to say, I think Arden was up too, yeah. So yeah.
And that was it. And now like, even Wampa's one of the older clans because Mareel and Arden and Tal, they're you know, double and hundred numbers too. And like actually being able to see Tal even just like my tiny little clan grow, it's amazing. All the way to Frigg up here in Maine where we can't do events 6 months out of the year, let alone what you Canadian guys have to go through to go to events.
You know what was really interesting for me too was when I deployed, you know, I left in January 2011, you know, I was pretty much out of touch for an entire year, and I came back in December of 2011, and when I finally got kind of settled in, so we'd gone from being just three members, myself and the two others that founded it with me, to we had, I think, another two or three pop up. I think there was two. So, you know, in just my clan, we had two guys that I'm like, who are these guys? Where do they come from, you know? And the club itself had gotten so big, it took me a good minute to kind of get caught up with how much growth had been there, how many more people were in the club in general. Because, you know, there was a time when the forums was all we had, and you kind of knew everybody, you know? It was Mayberry back in the day. You knew who was around you. You knew everybody in the club. You know, there was only no more than 300 by that point. And then I came back, and it was like almost 500 people. I'm like, I don't know who are all these people. Where did you all come from? You know, and it just that exponential growth, man.
Yeah, at this point, you blink and you miss so much.
Oh, yeah. Well, we, even just in the past year, I'm kind of sad that I had to stop doing it, but I used to, every time we had a batch of new members come through and we had in the new member welcome thread, everybody's app pictures, I used to stick all of those up on Twitter. And for about a year, it was fine, because, you know, it'd be like four or five people a week, unless it was going up into celebration period when we'd have 30 at a time. That didn't stop after this last celebration. It was just a batch of 25 after a batch of 25 after a batch of 25, and I could not keep up anymore. Like our growth rate made me give up a project just because it wasn't feasible anymore.
An interesting correlation to look at too. If you look at when our first, and I guarantee you, I'm sure Sean or Thaxos has a way to find a graph this all out. But if you look at when our big spike of numbers came in, I don't know what year it was that the Clone Wars introduced the Mandalorians, but there was a big spike there. And then which each season, the Clone Wars would show more of Mandalore, and the Mandalorians, not exactly as we knew them, but they were being brought into more focus. I could watch as the show progressed and included more Mandalorian content. Each time that there was another growth of mercs into the club. And I think I can honestly say I believe that the two go hand in hand. I think with our growth of popularity, it affected what Lucasfilm was doing, and they recognized it, and they put it into their show because they knew there was an audience for it, and that audience ate it up, and it got bigger, and it was a back and forth pendulum, and I think it's still going. That's why in Rebels we have a leading character that's a Mandalorian, and now we're getting so much more about the Mandalorian culture after the Clone Wars and their involvement with the Empire.
Yep. Well, and I can tell you pretty much verifiably that our involvement and specifically with Dave Filoni, has been an influencer of that decision. Because, I mean, guy's done tons of panels with us. We talk to him all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a huge... The fact that we exist and the fact that people enjoy what we do does definitely... influence what they put on the screen, and it's a positive feedback loop. You know, we make more popularity for Mandos, they make more popularity for Mandos.
Oh yeah, and
well, I guarantee every time there's when the Mandalorian story arc kicks up, every time the show is on, there's definitely a correlation in the Google searches
mm-hmm.
and how much traffic we get.
Mm-hmm. And I've said this before, but you know, 6 years ago. when I joined up, kids didn't really know what Mandalorians were. You know, we were Power Rangers, we were, you know,
Iron Man,
Halo,
Transformers.
Halo guys,
Chewbacca.
You know. Like, we've gotten, you know, a bunch of that sort of stuff, but I got to see, like, as the Clone Wars came out, we got to see, kids steadily would correct their parents, and like their parents, Star Wars fans would be like, "Oh, look at all the Boba Fetts," and the kids would correct their parents and say, "No, they're Mandalorians, Dad."
Gosh, Mom.
Yeah, it's like, geez, haven't you watched the show? And it's like, and just watching that develop into what it is today is amazing.
Oh yeah,
and that is largely thanks to Filoni and his crew making that fateful decision to, like, utterly, completely change the Mandalorian landscape in the sense of canon, and we'll talk about this later, because somebody asked us a question about that, so we'll be able to dive deeper, but, yeah. You called what?
I called this. As soon as they, y'all remember this, I said this on the podcast, where there people were talking about how they thought the pacifist Mandalorians are going to be the death of Mandalore, and nothing is... Y'all remember, and I was like, nah, dude, the fact that we are in the TV show...
Well, that and the pacifist Mandalorian thing didn't even last the season.
Didn't even last that arc?
Yeah, exactly.
It blew up the planet.
Yeah, like, everyone was all concerned that it's like, oh, there's only pacifist Mandos. It's like, immediately we had that reference to Vizsla and his Death Watch crew. It's like, see, there's already more than one. It's not all pacifists.
Yeah.
Relax, everybody.
Yeah. But again, we'll get into that a little bit later. I'd like to get back to Raiden for a second.
Okay.
I don't actually know what the Brigadier does.
Neither do I. I say that with only my tongue partly in cheek. I'd applied for this in August, and I took over at the end of August, and I've been trying to get my feet wet over the last 3 months. And basically, according to the Codex, the Brigadier is responsible for all aspects of the brigades. I guess I'm responsible for the conduct of the brigades. I have a seat on the command council. That's what I do.
Mostly he votes about whether or not you guys live or die.
Yes.
Well, there's that. I will say though that, the brigades team that was in place, was largely kept intact, and the brigade marshals that I have, Dabral, Aria, and Kai Ritet, I'm going to say that wrong, are fantastic. They are my subject matter experts in their fields. They have kept this thing going, perhaps in spite of me. But I view my job as far as running the... I don't view my job as running the day-to-day operations or the little stuff... Dar knows this. My grandfather was in the Navy during the Second War, and he told me that this is the way the Navy works. The officer is responsible, the chief is in charge, and the LPO, lead petty officer, runs the show. Is that about right, Dar?
I was in the Army, so you're speaking foreign language to me.
Talk about dolphins.
Yeah. All right, well, let me put it in an Army speak. The officer is responsible, the first sergeant is in charge, and the platoon sergeants run the show. Is that right?
That's a little bit closer, yeah.
Okay.
I think me and Tony can forgive you on that one.
Well, like I said, I'm using my grandfather's analogy, and he was a Navy man. But the brigade marshals oversee their particular brigades, when we talked about growth, I mean, the brigades have, I was doing a census, or I was doing a count of all of the members. We've had 203 brigade approved costumes come through the program. And of those, 13 were members with multiple brigade approved kits. And we've got some people that have multiple Boba Fett costumes, or might have a Boba Fett from Return of the Jedi and an Empire Strikes Back Boba Fett, or they might have a heavy assault and then have a medic kit and so on. But right now, the brigades have 158 active members. You know, and if what the club has 1650, what's that? That's a little less than 10%.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I know. There are people in here that are bad at math. So.
Oh, I'm super bad at math. So I'm not going to verify any number.
At math or just in general.
But the brigades are divided into three divisions: the offensive brigade, or the offensive division, the support division, and the cannon and legends. And I'm responsible for their conduct and growing the brigades as a program. Yeah, but some days I log into the forums and I don't know what the heck I'm doing, and I just hope that Faxos and Mandalore and Saz don't, you know, notice that.
We might notice, but we've also all been, except for Tom, Mandalore, we've all been in your shoes, though. You know, you're being a little humble there when you say that you've only been in the job for a couple months and you're not really sure on everything that you do. When I stepped in as tech officer, there was a lot that I had to be catching up on. Every time a new council member joins up, there is a good 6 to 12 months of just, can I do this? I guess I'm the boss. Guys, is that fine? And slowly but surely, as the council member gets a little more accustomed to the job, they become a little more assured in what they can and can't do on their own without having to get permission from others. And there's a whole network of who to go to for what stuff. Speaking of, I've had a decent number of PMs where people are just like, well, it's on the forums, so Thaxos can fix it. And it's like, not quite how that works, but I'm always happy to point people in the right direction if it ends up going my way and it's not quite where it's intended to go.
Brayden, keep in mind, think about when you became Alarad, you know, squad leader, you'd only been in for how many months? You weren't in for very long. And then next thing you know, you're in charge of a whole state and your growth had exploded and you were doing a great job as that. Try to keep in mind your accomplishments there can only be expanded on as you go higher in a more responsible given position. So like everybody else is in agreement here, you know, you're being very humble, but we all have faith that you're going to do a great job in the position, or else you wouldn't have gotten it.
Well, yeah. I appreciate that. And like I said, I will try to do my best. I mean, that's some days that's all I can do. I do remember getting a PM shortly after getting selected from Caden Darooney. And he was like, it's great not to be the new guy anymore. So I'm the new guy. So.
Eventually you will no longer be the new guy. And this will all feel like such a long time ago.
Yeah, I know. I can't wait for that day.
Well, and one other thing, like, too, to touch on your bit of math there. The other thing to touch on your bit of math there, too, is that in having seen the brigades be formed and then go through its different stages, it's never been about bulk membership. It's never been about converting everyone over. The brigades has always been a program to motivate people working on their kits. So, well, it's great to have the more brigade members, the better, obviously. But I've seen plenty of people that will just reference or thank the brigades in motivating them to take what they started off with and got approved with, and adding more detail and upgrading things. So there's that to keep in mind too. Whether it's you saying it or whether it's someone else looking at the brigades and going, "Huh, that's an interesting thing." It's more than just the people that actually go all the way and finish and become a brigade member.
Right. Well, you know, when I joined the club, I knew I wanted to join. I didn't know what the brigades were at the time, because in order to access the brigade section of the forums, you either have to be an official member or you have to be an auxiliary or a supporter member. And I wasn't. I know I shouldn't say that, but I wasn't.
You're allowed to admit that. That's fine.
So anyway, So I became an official member, and then, you know, after your permissions change, and then this new section of the forums opened up, and I thought, what is this? And so I went looking, and I knew shortly after I joined that I wanted to join the brigades and I wanted to join the medical corps and I wanted to be a medic. And there was some personal role play in that in terms of my character. I know some people have in their minds the character that they're portraying. My character goes back to MMOs, and when I play MMOs, I didn't play Galaxies, but I played Lord of the Rings Online, and I play SWTOR. And usually, if I'm in a raid, I'm the healer. Mm-hmm. Some of our other members in the medic brigade, are EMTs in real life. And so that's just kind of an extension of their jobs. And so for me, that was the next step. And when, like I said, when I came into the Mercs, I didn't have any experience in costuming. I mean, I didn't know the first thing, and there was a lot of trial and a lot of error, and I scrapped a lot of Sintra, and I bought a lot of pieces. I mean, my wife, we'd come home from work and there'd be a package by the front door, and she'd give me that look like, what did you buy? what did you buy this time? Nothing. So there was that, to me, the brigades were an inspiration, as you said, to improve my armor, to change, to upgrade, and just to get better. Because I look back at my OM application and I think, oh my God, this was horrible.
I think a lot of us do that.
Yeah, exactly.
God.
I was about to ask, how many versions of Raiden have there been now?
There have been a bunch. I would say two major revisions. Because I applied with the standard 5-piece chest armor set, and then I upgraded to a legacy style because I have a philosophical problem with the regular FET templates. Because you're telling me that there's going to be an inch gap between your plates, especially right around your heart.
Yeah.
And that I don't that for me that doesn't work for me psychologically. So
what
that's
could
why
possibly
I
go wrong.
Well, it doesn't. It really doesn't work on any level. But it looks cool.
I know. And that's the response I always got was, well, that's the visual reference we have. And I get that it does look cool, but I also like the legacy style because it just sits on my shoulders.
Yes.
And so it's not, you know, I don't have to worry about if I bend or it'll flex or it'll piece will pop off or anything like that. But the other thing about the club that I just liked is that the other role play reason for upgrading my armor and going where I was is, you know, when you play an MMO, you have a level one character or any role playing game. You have a level one character and you have lousy gear, right? It looks goofy. The stats stink. And over time you upgrade. And for me, there was kind of a journey with my armor. You know, I upgraded my gauntlets and I added this these pouches and I upgraded my blasters and I added pistols and other things. And so for me, you know, going through those different versions of the kit was a step in my mind in terms of building my character and coming along, joining the brigades and then adding, you know, again, other pieces. And now we have a running joke in my clan, which is, how much crap can Dave carry? Because I keep adding things. And every couple of months, I'll just put something on. I'll put a boot knife on, or I'll put another pistol on, and I'll wait and see who notices or how long it takes them.
Nice.
Yeah, let's see. I think I'm on version 4. Yeah, I think the only piece of armor that is left from my original set used to be one of my shoulder bells, and that actually snapped in half, so I have to replace that. So yeah, the only thing left from my original application photos are my leather spats.
Wow. For me, and mind you, so I created my Mando before there was a Mandalorian Mercs back
before
in 2004.
It was cool. Yeah, what you were going to say?
No, because Jango Fett had just come into existence, so it was pretty... Jango Fett had just come into existence, it was pretty cool already.
Warning, incoming hipster frost.
however, I still have an original piece, and it is actually the volleyball knee pads that I used to mount my my knee plates. It is literally the only piece of original gear.
And it's not actually the knee plates, it's just the mounting.
No, it is the volleyball, like, the volleyball the pads pad that it. Hold them on. But interestingly enough, I can also kneel.
Kneeling is very important for photos only, when you get a big group.
The only original piece to mine would be my helmet. I don't think anything, I think I've revamped everything.
And you can't get rid of that helmet, man.
Mm. Oh, I'll never get... I've got plans for a different helmet once I get my health situation back in order. I have a new helmet that I'm going to replace with. I'm never going to get rid of my helmet. It'll stay a mantelpiece like it should, but but the new helmet's going to be a comparative commando helmet anyway, so I'm still keeping with that theme. But
what about the blaster? I thought one of your blasters was the original.
Nope, both of those were remade because you have the one that I originally had that I got from Kando, and I gave that one to you, but I bought the same airsoft shotgun, two of them, and I made it look as close to identical, but a little bit better than my original build of it. So those weren't the original one you have.
He wanted it to look good, but he wanted it to be better than yours.
Well, no, it's more like what Raiden was saying. You know, you go from your level one, which is like the cheap armor that you don't want, and you slowly progress up and you make it look better.
I built a pair of vibro knucklers out of cherry.
Like,
it's my first weapon.
Like the wood.
Yeah. No.
Yeah, I'll order something now, and my wife will be like, "What did you buy?" Well, I bought something, and she's like, "Well, what is it?" Well, it's for my Amando. She's like, "I thought you were through with that." You know, honey, you're never through. But that's kind of the fun of the club. And that's what I, again, to go back to the customization thing. That's what appealed to me about this club, as opposed to some of the other Star Wars clubs. Again, not to knock them, or because you know. They have fantastic costumes, but I do enjoy the customization and the individuality. But you know, you put 50 of us together, or we march through the Dragon Con parade, and you can tell we're all together, and everybody knows it. And to me, that's just it's a lot of fun.
It's the uniqueness becomes the uniform. That we're able to walk around, and oh, there's one who's painted to look like Optimus Prime, and then there's one who. Is made out of a bunch of steel plates and is incredibly skinny and has a weird little smile on his helmet.
I don't know who you're talking about.
I have no idea.
That could be anybody.
I have a little gold Mandalorian helmet painted on mine.
Is that for the Mando you killed?
No, that was at a... What was it? It was a library event, and they were doing fake glitter face painting. So I just sat down in front of one of the girls that was doing the face painting. Was like, "Can I get this?" Like, just gesturing to my entire helmet because I hadn't taken it off yet. "Can I just get this right here on the cheek?" And she went with it.
That's awesome.
And so, like, I just have this little. I honestly thought it was gonna.
My face.
Yeah, and like I didn't take the helmet off to do it. I just sort of sat there. But yeah, I honestly thought it would have flaked off a long time ago, but that's still there. It's been almost a year now.
You'll never get rid of it.
Nope. That's a permanent part of my DSB helmet now. It's never going anywhere.
When it comes to glitter, I'm pretty 100% certain, even though the tote has been spray painted, my original tote, my armor bin, still has glitter from Misha.
Oh,
and
probably.
I'm pretty sure.
Oh, of course.
Like
C5.
Say again.
Oh wait, no, C6. She wasn't at C5. Was she?
No, I wasn't at C6. It was when me and Thaxos went on the Moose and Gooble adventure to MegaCon.
The surprise trip to MegaCon.
I still find glitter in my armor. Like I don't know where it comes. Like how I haven't gotten rid of it, but. Wherever I go, Misha's still there.
About to say, is she going to get ticked off that she missed a discussion about glitter?
Probably. Oh, and we're going to definitely rub it in her face that she missed out.
It'll be fine.
Better you guys than me.
Oh, man. So, let's see. What was next? Let's see. Next item on the agenda is Merc's News, and we don't have a whole lot to go over this time that's specifically Merc's News, but our buddy Dar here managed to score a trip to Skywalker Ranch of all of the destinations on the planet. That is pretty high near the list of most people in this club. So why don't you tell us about your trip and how that all came about and the experience you had.
Okay, well, first of all, I have to preface that none of it could have been possible if it wasn't for one of my best friends in the entire world, and honorary Mandalorian merc, Robert Cunningham. He's a buddy of mine that I met when I was in Afghanistan. And he's a huge Star Wars fan. He's a photographer. He's been all over the world. He and a handful of others were able to go to Tunisia and repair the Lars homestead, the top of the dome of the hut, where you see Luke come up out of the dome, and he stands on the hillside looking at the sunset. The double sun setting. Mm-hmm. That set piece over the decades was deteriorating, and he and a handful of others got to go and repair it. And he's done photography all over the world. He's got photos from all sorts of different film locations, from the different planets, Hoth, Naboo, Endor. I think he's got a few other shots in Tunisia from Tatooine. But anyways. So I have to say, of all things, I have to thank him first and foremost, because it wouldn't have been possible if he hadn't invited me to go on to a special event with him, which Skywalker Ranch has. They produce what is called Skywalker Vineyard wine. They have a vineyard on the ranch. The ranch is actually fully functional ranch, what a lot of people don't realize. They grow their own beef there. They have several vineyards. They have a vineyard for doing like olive oils and stuff like that. They've got, I think from what I remember from the tour that we got, that they have an orchard for like a garden for farm food and whatnot. So anyways, they have a vineyard, and they are producing wine called Skywalker Vineyard Wine by an individual, the winemaker, the head winemaker, his name is Scott McLeod. And they had an event that was unveiling a new wine that they had produced. And so I got to go to that. He flew me out. My buddy flew me out to San Francisco. He picked me up. A bunch of my friends on Facebook got to watch me tease the way that I had been scooped up on a secret mission by the Rebel Alliance, and it was just
so
a lot
much
of fun.
Teasing. So much teasing.
It was fun.
It was tough figuring out just what exactly you were up to as well.
Well, he had told me about a week or so in advance, because we had to plan out, if I had school to be in the way, or the plane ticket and everything. So, he had told me, don't say anything, wait till you get there, and then you can be like na 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 boo boo. So, I had a little bit of fun because I just couldn't keep it to myself, but I didn't want to spoil the surprise that I was going to get to share with everybody. So I get to San Francisco. They pick me up. And he actually took me on a quick detour, which was hilarious, because before we got to the hotel to go get ready, he says, I want to take you by this old army base. Okay. Now, he and I, I was in the military. He was a photographer and did a lot of stuff with the military. So we're all history, army, military buff stuff, right? And so we go to this old base. And in San Francisco, right near the base of the Golden Gate Bridge, there is a decommissioned military base that they had decommissioned back in like the 70s or 60s, 80s, something like that. And the base still has a lot of the original buildings. And one of the original buildings was the old hospital. And he said, we're going to go there. Okay. So it was funny. We pull up to the gate. Well, it's not so much a gate. There's just a guard shack there. And we pull up to it. And I look over past him, and there's all sorts of Star Wars stickers, and I see a Mando Merc sticker on the Guard Shack booth for the location we were going. And I leaned over and I said, "Dude, hey, that's a Mando sticker. I know what that is." And I go, "I'm with them." And the guy starts to say something, and my buddy Robert says, "Shush, shush, shush, shush. He's never been here before." And now I'm starting to think, okay, something's going on. Like, Robert is a very calculating individual. He doesn't do things by chance or accident. I know he's up to something, so I'm trying to figure out what it is. We park, and he says, "Let's go over here." I'm like, "All right, whatever." So we're walking towards this lobby, and there's the white wood framework and everything, and I'm looking, and all of a sudden I notice there's some trees and a fountain, and on top of the it's Yoda. He took me to the headquarters for Lucasfilm Limited, which blew my mind. So I got to take a picture with Yoda. We go inside the – so at Lucasfilm Limited, you can go into the lobby, and they got several awesome things in there. They've got the Lego dress, the Lego Ahsoka dress that Ashleen Eckstein – did I pronounce her name right?
Ashley Eckstein, yeah.
Ashley Eckstein. The Lego dress that she wore is in the lobby at Lucasfilm. They have several statues. They got like a small little library wall and shelves with books all over it. And what was funny, I walk up to – they got a prop statue of Boba Fett. And I walk up to it, and I'm looking at it, and I go – and at first I thought maybe it might have been like an old – set costume or something they had on hand that they, and I'm looking at it and I go, no, that there is no way that would ever get approved. The spacing's too off. that belt's the wrong, that belt pouches are green. They're not brown. You know, this just looks, and I'm picking it apart like I'm part of the Mercs or something. And I'm, and so anyways, got to see all this other stuff that they had a statue of Darth Vader in there. They've got a if you go to your theater, they've got this the new display for the Rogue One and whatnot, where it's got all the characters. They got one of those in there, and it was just kind of cool to be able to see that location, because that's one of those, man, you never think that you ever get a chance to go there unless you're local in that area or you have the funds or the means or the ability to do it, which I've never had any of. So to go there was just such a surprise and such a treat. So we get on our way. We get to our hotel. We got changed because I'm sitting here thinking, okay, we're going to some sort of fancy people wine event. Okay, so I need to dress nicely. So the only nice clothes I had was my slacks and a t-shirt, button-up shirt for like job interviews. And I have this terribly gaudy Boba Fett tie that I bought because I was like, I probably have no point in my life or ever going to be wearing a tie, but I'm going to buy this Boba Fett tie anyways. Well, lo and behold, I'm going to this fancy snazzy wine event. I'm going to wear my tie of all places. And so we go to Lucas Valley Road, go up into the mountains. It's getting dark. I really can't see much at this point. And we get to – there's two entrances onto – Skywalker Ranch. There's the 3838 entrance and then the 5858. I think it's 58. I might be off by the number, but it's 58. I think it's 58. Anyways, so we get there and we check in through the security gate. They do have a security gate there. There's no getting on this place without somebody knowing about it. Security is very, very there. It's apparent. So we get there. They say, "Oh yes, you guys are on the guest list. Come on in." So we go to the building that once housed the animations department, and it is one of the most. I'm not a big architectural guy. I mean, there's sometimes that I get into if something is built that looks nice, you know, I'll admire it and I'll appreciate it for what it is. But the pure energy that just comes out of this building is undescribable. You come in, and it might have affected because it was nighttime, but I don't think it would have changed. So everything at this ranch and in Lucas put the money into it, and he had to bite the bullet to do it. But all the locations have a roundabout that you don't see parking anywhere. There's no parking lots or anything. Everything is hidden or underground, or it's everything that's at Skywalker Ranch is done with a purpose and a very specific attention to detail. And as I got to see at another location that I'll get into here shortly, or maybe not as shortly as everybody might want, but everything has such an attention to detail that if I ever hear anybody criticize George Lucas again, I'm going to call them a fool. Because while a lot of people criticize his films and his decisions to do what he did, which was his right to do, they fail to understand that this man has a vision and a specific sight in mind that I don't think you can truly appreciate unless you truly appreciate the films the way they're supposed to be. But going to this place, knowing that he envisioned a lot of everything that went on in the construction of this place, really changed my perspective of him. So we go into the building, and it's got a small courtyard, which also has one of the three Yoda statue fountains. There's actually three of them. There's one at Lucasfilm, there's one here at this location, and then there's another one in a park. It's a like a forest park somewhere in that area. So anyways, the building has a combined architecture of Frank Lloyd Wright and a very Japanese inspired architecture. And I couldn't take photos and whatnot, but trying to describe, like, the lighting, there was not a single light that you could see. It was all indirect lighting. They had the lighting where you couldn't see it, but it made everything so smooth and relaxing and calming. And everything was done specifically so that the people who were working there on the films and the animations and everything could feel relaxed and comfortable in their work environment. I mean, I couldn't imagine a place that would have been better to work than Skywalker Ranch. So, anyways, I'm sorry I'm going so on and on about that. But we ended up going up to where they're doing the vineyard, where they actually process the wine and everything. And I got to meet, of all people, Kathleen Kennedy.
Nice.
Yeah, we had no idea that she would be there either. It totally surprised us when we noticed she was there. So I decided that when I got the opportunity to speak to her, that I would give her one of my few remaining Blue Moon Clan five-year anniversary coins. And so I got to give the head of Lucasfilm one of my clan coins, which was like, I can't believe I just did that. And then we went back down to the other building, the original building, where the rest of the wine event was, and it was just a wonderful evening. It was beautiful, a lot of good people there. And we were allowed to be invited because of some factors. We got to be invited back the following morning for a tour of the big house, the house where, you know, everybody sees the Skywalker Ranch house. And that was an amazing opportunity that doesn't normally happen because it takes a lot of time to be able to get in on one of those tours. So it was like, oh wow. The next day we go up there the next morning, and again, this side of the ranch, It's all done the same way, where everything is just meticulously done. It was one of the most beautiful places I've ever been in my entire life. And when we got up to the ranch house, the big house, there were two cars parked in front of it. And our guide, who she was a wonderful lady, if she ever gets a chance to listen to this, I don't think she will, but she was amazing, amazing host and guide, and she was fantastic at what she did. But she informed us, Mr. George Lucas is on the property, and if you see him or come across him, don't say anything to him. You're not allowed to talk to him. You know, he's just don't acknowledge his presence. So we go inside, and once again, the architecture was just the most exquisite designs and work of art that I had ever seen put into a building. It was very humbling to be in there. And then as we were coming through, I heard a voice upstairs, and I cocked my ear up and I heard it speaking, and I knew for that moment I heard the maker. I heard the man upstairs. I'm like, I can't believe this is actually happening. So the tour goes on, and on top of all that, the tour itself was for a handful of people, and we just happened to be tacked on at the end. One of those individuals was Mr. Steve Sansweet himself, and he is a very, very just genuine good person. He was a very pleasant person to be around. He just had a good energy about him. He was just nice and easy to talk to. And after the tour, they allowed us to stay for lunch. They have a cafe there at the ranch. And that was one of the most delicious meals that I've ever had in my entire life. And after that, they pretty much told us that was it, and you know, gave us the polite hint that it was time to go, and on we went, and we got to drive off of Skywalker Ranch, drove past Skywalker Sound and the archive where everything is, and that was my trip to Skywalker Ranch. It was beyond words amazing, and I don't think I could put words to describe how wonderful an event that it was.
That's amazing you got to go.
Yeah, that's one of those little trips where you just kind of, I mean, I'd love to go, obviously. I don't know about you guys, but yeah, I'd love to go, even if Kathleen Kennedy and Lucas aren't there.
Oh, and to throw a little bit more of a Blue Moon Pride out there, because I took two of my coins with me. At the wine event, I got to meet Scott McCloud, the gentleman who's making the wine. And when he found out about my military background and everything, he was very generous and kindly bought me a bottle of the wine. And in return, well, first, he said one of the most profound things to me that anybody's ever said. He said, I would trade a bottle of wine for service any day. And at first it didn't sink into me, but later on my buddy Robert and I discussed it and talked about it, and it really, really hit me as more profound, because this is a gentleman who, if you guys know anything about wine, which I don't, but I was quickly educated, he is one of the most head top guys when it comes to making wine. He is one of the premier in the world winemakers. And this man, his entire livelihood is based on wine. It's his. And for him to say something like that to me, what was just it was, like I said, it didn't register at first until my buddy kind of reminded me and kind of talked to me about it, and it made sense that I, because there was a lot coming at me the whole night. I mean, it was just a very overwhelming evening, and so he said that to me. It was really touching. So I decided to give him one of my, again, few remaining original Blue Moon Clan coins, which were coincidentally minted in 2014. The wine that he bought me, that he gave me, that they were presenting, was a 2014 vintage wine. And when I gave him the coin, he said that coin will watch over the production of the wine at Skywalker Vineyards, and he would keep it there. So
that's incredible.
That's pretty freaking amazing.
That Blue Moon Clan has made a mark at Skywalker Ranch. That's I can brag about that.
Yeah. That's fantastic.
That is really cool.
Wow. All right. So that's a pretty good replacement for Merc's news.
I'll take it.
Yeah.
I'm glad I get to share that with you guys. I wish I could have taken everybody with me. It's just one of those. It was a surprise to me, of all things. So I try to share it with everybody, because I wish they could all experience it like I did.
That's awesome. Alright, so next thing that we had on the list here is, you may have heard by now, Rogue One's coming out.
There's a new movie?
Yeah, there's a new movie. It's coming out soon.
Did you guys hear they've already announced a sequel?
They have. Yeah, what was the release date on the sequel to Rogue One?
I believe it was May 24th, 1977.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Huh. Are they calling it Rogue Two?
Actually, I believe the one that's titled Rogue Two is supposed to come out in 1980.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, that one's all
looking
about
Wedge. To that.
Yeah, that's all Wedge all the time.
Yep.
Yep.
I would laugh so hard if they actually did that, though. They released a Rogue Two movie that was straight up all Wedge all the time.
That would be good.
It would confuse people.
It would
confuse everybody who didn't care about any of the old books. But yeah, I would watch the crap out of that.
He was Rogue Two in the films too.
He was, but I mean, it's outside from. That's the funniest thing about the Wedge Antilles character is one of those like double sided characters where he's famous. Period. So he's the only guy who managed to survive two Death Star battles. And that's documented in the movies. That's never going anywhere.
Isn't that alien co-pilot for Lando in the second one, Nien Nunb?
No.
Or however you pronounce it.
There's only humans and Chewbacca in the first Death Star battle.
Yep.
I thought he was at both.
No, nope. They spent all the monster budget on the cantina.
Yeah. No, he may have been at the base, but he wasn't one of the pilots. Those are all pretty well tracked down at this point. But, and then if you actually look into the old EU, he's one of the, if you had to pick 20 characters and of, you know, your top 20 characters appearance-wise, Wedge is up there.
Definitely.
Yeah, I mean, he's been in all of the Rogue Squadron books, all of the Rey Squadron books.
All of the
books.
Rogue One books, stares at aggressively.
All of the he was in most of the latter big 13 book series. He was in New Jedi Order, Fate of the Jedi, Legacy of the Force. He was in all those. So that was why I was really, really sad that Richard Dawson declined to join in on the Episode 7 festivities, because I would have loved to have seen Old Wedge. I really would have, even if he's just in that one scene around the battle table. I would have loved that. But anyway, I digress.
I mean, they even brought back Admiral Akbar.
Yeah.
Wearing like a weird hat.
But yes, Rogue One is coming out. Chances are, if there is a theater near you, there may be Mercs or Stormtroopers or Jedi hanging around at it on invitation from said theater. So say hi to us while you wait in line. Yeah, Rogue One's coming out. It's going to have Kung Fu and spies and Forrest Whitaker Eye. And...
I'd like to point out that this may actually be the return of, like, force-based martial arts like TK.
Well, it could be. It could be. Everything that they've said about Donnie Yen's character says that he is not a Jedi, he is not a force wielder or anything like that. Just, you know...
I don't buy that.
I don't buy it either, honestly, because, I mean...
Like, Dude can see, and he's blind.
Benny, he believes in the Force. He's like Maz Kanata. He believes that the Force is a thing, and that it is a force in the galaxy. Haha, great naming scheme, George. I want him to stay not a Force user and have this just be a bunch of plucky rebels trying to steal the Empire's crap, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I want this to be, like, the first non-Jedi-oriented Star Wars movie.
It's Star Wars. The thing that makes Star Wars different from any other science fiction, well, science fantasy, really, is the Force.
Right. That's true.
Space magic.
That is true. Space magic does set Star Wars apart. But I mean, as much as I also want Donnie Yen to do something other than Kung Fu, he is really good at it. And he's going to be fun to watch.
Well, I'm just happy that they're having a Star Wars movie that doesn't revolve around Skywalker family drama.
Yes.
I mean, to be fair, I'm pretty sure the back 20 minutes of this movie is going to be Skywalker family kicking serious butt. I'm just going to chop this kid in half. I'll chop that kid in half. That droid everybody likes, Force Crush. All right.
Probably. And honestly, like, I am sort of hoping for that Empire Strikes Back sad ending, even though the good guys eventually win because they do steal the plan. Spoiler alert.
Oh, my God! I haven't seen it yet. How do you know?
Ah!
Come on, man.
Ruin the game for me, man.
But, so, I mean, I do hope that is actually the end, but Vraiden's right. This will be the first one that it has, aside from Vader being in it, Vader being around in the galaxy, it doesn't focus on anybody remotely related to the Skywalkers. So that's going to be nice to see for the first time in history.
It'll be other family drama.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because, I mean, there's loads
Star Wars
of family
is
drama.
A family film.
It is. He made it for his kids. No, he didn't have kids when he made it. He made the prequels for his kids.
That's fair.
So
his kids were in the prequels.
Yeah, right?
Have I mentioned how glad I am that they're recycling a lot of the prequel actors?
Honestly, yes. Like that.
That's very good.
I don't know if you've mentioned it, but yes, it is great. Like, I forget her name, but the lady who played Mon Mothma in Episode 3, she's back as Mon Mothma. Jimmy Smits is back as Bail Organa. These are just good ideas. Like, these are
I'm not saying I'm really hoping for the Obi-Wan movie, but I'm so really hoping for the Obi-Wan movie.
Yeah, one of the best things that the prequels did give us was Ewan McGregor as Obi-Wan. Like, we can all agree on that.
I think it is the good thing the prequels gave us. Like, it is probably the best thing out of the prequels.
Overall, yeah. I mean, I will praise anything.
Number 2 is Temuera Morrison.
Yeah, I will praise Temuera Morrison and Christopher Lee until I die.
Well, I mean, Christopher Lee doesn't even count because, like,
he's Christopher
Lee. That's like saying, yeah, what are your top 3 favorite movies? And they are 3 Star Wars films. You only get to pick one Star Wars movie once. Christopher Lee is your automatic. I mean, it's like Peter Cushing.
Right.
Peter Cushing is the best. Peter Cushing and Alec Guinness are the best actors who have ever been in Star Wars.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like,
no doubt.
Yeah. So, and then, like, number 2 is probably Chris Lee, and number 3 is Ian McGregor, and then number 4 is
Liam
Neeson.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree.
Number 5 is Harrison.
Yeah. And then everybody else is pretty much just a close tie after that.
Yeah.
We'll say that.
Yeah, we'll say that, so we don't have to keep doing the list.
Right. Because the 7,000 people who have been in Star Wars. I mean, the Wilbur Hood guy, he deserves consideration running down that hallway. You know?
He does. He does with the ice cream maker.
Yep.
That was hard work.
It was.
Yeah, and he's a husky dude.
Yeah.
he had to truck that scene a couple times. Like, you know that they filmed that more than once.
Oh, yeah. yeah. Anyway, my only question, I haven't bothered to really look into Rogue One. I'm not exactly avoiding spoilers or anything like that. I just haven't bothered to look into it. The dude in the white, who is that supposed to be?
Rennick. So that's actually an outfit that does exist. There was one of those guys on the Bridge of the Executor in Empire. That uniform, and there's one in the Bridge of the
original
the Death Star.
Yep. Yeah. When was it Admiral Mahdi when he's getting choked out by Vader?
No. He's wearing a Navy uniform because the intelligence guys. That's what that is. That's mm-hmm. the. That's actually Comp Nor. They renamed it, but it's Comp Nor.
Okay. Yep. Yep. That's who it was. But yeah. So, but the character, who is that supposed to be?
He's the guy who somebody tossed the Death Star project on him, and he's the poor, long-suffering individual who's had to deal with that massive boondoggle.
So, I thought that was supposed to be Tarkin.
I know
it's not Tarkin.
Tarkin gets put back in charge of it, because it is so behind schedule.
Oh, okay.
Like, now, to be fair, if any of you guys have ever seen them try to build, like, a beltline around a city, it taking 20 years to build something the size of a moon really isn't that unrealistic, despite what everybody has always said.
Yeah.
So, I thought, I was under the impression that Tarkin was, like, Director Krennic's boss. Like, I thought he was, I thought Tarkin was a part of the project pretty much from the get-go.
Yeah, I think it's just it, his direct role varied in and out.
Yeah, like, he was probably a moth. He had to go and, like, run, like, 30 planets.
Yeah.
Like, no, that is
true. He helped, like, finish up the designs once the Empire actually decided to use them. And then he went and was a governor. And then he came back, and then he was a governor again. And then just, yeah, and then by the time the actual Tarkin book specifically rolled back out, he was like, now this is... I'm putting my claws back in this. This stuff has got to be finished someday.
Now, do we know if they've been completely debunked about them bringing Tarkin in through the use of, like, CGI and recreating him into a lifelike representation of Peter Cushing?
No,
because I remember hearing about that in the original rumor mill of the film.
That sounds like a rumor. They've been pretty good about not depicting dead people as digital clones
so far, but they've done numerous actual digital clones.
Yes, they have.
Well, they did a little bit with, like, Paul Walker and I can't think of the other guy.
Not in real life. I meant, like, in Star Wars.
Yeah, like, yeah, that technique
is all added over the to place. The end of Queen of the Damned.
Oh yeah, like, that technique is all over the place in Hollywood today. But yeah, I don't know if they're I can't say, like, I don't know if I would be mad if they digitally inserted Tarkin in for a cameo. I don't know if I would be mad. But at the same
time, I'd be okay
if
he was a background character, kind of like you said with Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Yeah.
Like, not so much if he was actually, like, a speaking role and they just animated him for that scene.
Yeah, that I would be a little more disappointed in if they went that way.
Well, I know that the reason why I was wondering, because I'd heard about it when, because they were, the rumor that I had read was they were talking about doing the CGI reconstruction and having the gentleman who does the voice of Tarkin in who did the voice of Tarkin in both Clone Wars and Rogue One, who I think he does a fantastic job as Tarkin, but I'd heard that they would try to recreate Tarkin for the film via that means and have the other guy from the cartoons do the voice acting for it.
I'd heard that, but yeah, I don't know if they're still going through with that or not. Who knows?
I mean, we'll find out in 2 weeks, right?
Right. Yeah, it's that, we're that close to another Star Wars movie, guys. Like, that's...
And let's make it
awesome.
Clear. This isn't just another Star... This is the second Star Wars film after we were told there would be no more films.
Right. It's, yeah. It's a good time to be around, you know?
It is a new era, ladies and gentlemen.
Alright, so, and that's about it for Star Wars news, really. That's all we had. Because Rebels is doing Rebels things. Hate them, don't hate them. You know, whatever you want. I'm not mad they're bringing stuff back.
Mandalorian Super Commandos for the Empire.
Yep, which...
Where they should be.
And we'll be able to dive into that a little bit. Actually, we can dive into that now, actually. No, this is an excellent segue.
Uh-huh.
We had a bunch of Facebook questions here, and I'll get them into the chat so you guys can read them. But Anna asked us, she wants to know how we feel about the Mandalorian culture and how it was butchered in the cartoons. Those are her words. I don't personally believe that they were butchered. Like we mentioned earlier in the beginning, like, bringing in the Mandalorians through the pacifists and then smacking that away with the Death Watch, that gave Mandalorians to a new generation of kids who are now signing up for us. Like,
that old now.
Yeah, they're actually able to get into the, you know, they're the older Verdicas, they're the younger 18-year-old members, so they grew up with Duchess Satine and the neutral Mandalorians and Prey Vizsla. Like, this is... How is that bad?
Yeah.
And
well, there are always the people who don't like whatever the new thing is. I mean, I'm old enough, like I said, I'm older than you guys. I'm old enough that I've seen all the Star Wars movies in the theater in their original release. And I was 10 when Return of the Jedi came out, and there were people who hated the Ewoks.
Oh yeah.
And then when I was in college, the special editions came out, and there were people who hated the special editions for whatever
Still
reason.
Are.
Right. And then there are people who hated the prequels. And then there are people who hated the Clone Wars.
Yep.
But each incarnation of Star Wars, I mean, my stepson was 5 years old, 6 years old, when Phantom Menace came out. And even though he had watched the other movies with me, the prequel trilogy is his Star Wars.
Yep.
And for kids coming up now with the Clone Wars and with Rebels, that's their Star Wars. And you know, for all the people who say, oh, this ruined my childhood. Well, your childhood is fine.
Yeah.
Your childhood's kids... over, actually.
Yes. Yes.
And you don't get another one, so knock it off.
Right. My childhood ended about 25 years ago, and I'm okay with that. But what Star Wars does so geniusly is it keeps reinventing itself for a new generation, you know, 5-10 years later or something new. And, you know, even though the old EU got wiped away and is now relegated to legend status and is being parts of it are being overwritten, I mean, it's still there for us to enjoy, to go back and read or to watch. So I think it's great. Anytime they introduce something new and it brings more people into the fold, into the Star Wars family or into our club, I think it's great.
Yeah. And I've yet to actually see the episode, but the Imperial Super Commandos, that's almost the old canon. Like,
that is the old canon. That is the pre-Karen Travis canon.
Yeah. Like, that's the Mandalore was occupied by the Imperials, and being the enterprising people that the Mandalorians are, of course, some of them worked for the literal highest bidder in the galaxy. Look at Boba Fett. He was, like, he was Vader's personal
highest
go-to
paid
guy.
Bounty hunter ever.
Yeah. It's like, I need you to find and kill someone. I'm too busy to take care of myself. He calls up a Mandalorian. Mandalorian's like, yes, money, please. So.
Yeah, no, I think you guys have pretty much stated my entire opinion on that whole thing. It's just a small fraction of what we see.
Yeah.
And as with everything Star Wars, you can't just, you know, you can make the assumption that, oh, Kashyyyk's a tree planet, but then later on they've added stuff where it's like, no, there's actually sections of swamp where there are no trees, and it's real dangerous for Wookiees with all the regular animals that are down on the floor, on the surface of the planet.
Yeah, it's like there's a world that is made out of more than one ecosystem.
Yeah,
it's
weird. Very surprising.
That's crazy talk.
Guys, check it out. Naboo has cold spots.
And something else that's cool about the new Imperial Super Commandos is if you look at their armor, they're heavily, heavily based off the original Ralph McQuarrie sketches of Boba Fett. Well, the Ralph McQuarrie and Joe Johnston sketches of Boba Fett. When his original incarnation, he wasn't a bounty hunter. He was actually what these Mandalorians are. Imperial Stormtrooper Super Commandos is what their original developed idea was intended to be. But when they discovered that the costume was going to be too difficult to make multiple versions of, where they just had to literally, you know, screen press out the Stormtrooper armor or the vacuform process, you know, they ended up scrapping the Super Commando and decided to throw him in as the bounty hunter. So we're getting the original actual incarnation of what the Mandalorians were intended to be. And I think that's absolutely fascinating. I love the fact that they're pulling out all of the original concept stuff and giving it life that it didn't get before. I'm a little on the fence on how heavily they're doing it. Like, I love the fact they're doing it for Rebels. I think they play too heavily on it for the Force Awakens. I understand why they did it, but I would like to see them start to do a little bit more original stuff, but at least with the Mandos, we're getting a full scope of new stuff, but stuff that is historically to the franchise being brought in and given to us. And I like that. I think that's very awesome of them.
Yes.
Well said.
So, yeah, Anna, that is how we feel about the new Mandalorian canon. It's as good as the old stuff, if not better.
Yeah. Well, actually, so, as somebody who was around before the Travis books were published, the stuff that they are pushing now is substantially more like the Mando canon that you had prior to then, which admittedly there wasn't a whole lot of it.
Of it was terrible.
And some of it was really, really terrible. But Twin Engines of Destruction comes from this period, as does Jodo Cast.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of the really good stuff about Mandalorians comes from this period. And I'm glad that they're going back that way, because, frankly, it gives us a lot more room to work in. Yeah. Like, you get more interesting stories. You no longer have the story about, I'm a Mandalorian protector who signed up with insert some Mando names here, and now I'm a Mandalorian protector, guys. You get stories like, oh yeah, my person is from, I don't know, some planet or another, and had to murder 50 Trandoshans to earn his armor or something. You know? Like, you get interesting background stories. They aren't like the stock ball and trade anymore, which is actually the thing I'm interested in. It's one of the few things that makes me actually pay attention to somebody, is if they have an interesting character story. That's what makes people stand out to me. Also, if their costume's really awesome.
Yeah, I don't have an interesting backstory, so he just doesn't pay attention to me.
No, I don't.
No, he doesn't.
Completely ignore him. Every single time I see him, I just pretend not to see him.
Right. This is the relationship we have.
As long as you understand that.
Yep. All right, so next question we got is from Casey, and his words, not gonna lie, y'all should do the best COD piece attachment method, because in all my searching of the forums, I can't seem to find any post about it. Which, I don't blame you, Casey. The forums are labyrinthine and expansive, and they are a fabulous trove of knowledge, but they go back quite a ways. So to find that one glorious thread that it exists somewhere, it'll take you days to find it sometimes. But, and I'd actually like to know this too, because I keep trying different stuff with my COD plate, and I'm never happy with the way the mounting goes. So, gentlemen, your thoughts.
Well, I would definitely agree.
Okay.
Yeah, I definitely agree that in this case it is rather difficult to find info on that on the forums, because I'm hitting up a search in just COD plate attachment, and you get a ton of things popping up on those three keywords without actually pulling up the actual info. And then looking on the actual tutorial section, there's nothing that jumps out immediately. This would be a good use of the app team Q&A section. So right at the top of the Mandalorian armor section, we have Mandalorian Q&A, and there's a question form that you can submit that, and I'm sure the app team could give you a couple options. My best guess would be to run over to the costume gallery, or to find someone's whip thread that they've completed at this point that does have a COD plate and has a, you think might have a good attachment method. I'm not really sure otherwise. I've got one of those loincloths, so
of course,
pass it over to you COD people.
So, as somebody who has worn a COD piece the entire time he's been a Mando, the two methods that I found that have worked really well for me are on my steel COD piece, my very heavy steel one made by none other than Andalor the Unit. I knew you would like that one.
You'll know Frost isn't feeling well if he ever doesn't make that reference when he's talking about Mandalore.
Yes, so made by Tom. And the way I actually attach that is I just have, it is straight up hot glued, and it is hot glued to elastic waist cinching stuff from like dresses. You can get this elastic banding, and it's like 4 inches thick. And it is obviously designed for waists and dresses for women, but you can get it at Joann's. And you can straight glue that stuff in, and it will hold it up. It probably could hold up maybe 6-7 pounds worth of material pretty easily. It's really useful because you can just slide it on, slide it off. There's no straps or anything. If it needs to move a little bit, it will move a little bit, which as a guy, that's real nice. it works out real, real well. It works much better than the other methods I've tried, like the boba thong and all of that jazz. Now, there's plenty of people who swear by the boba thong, so that may be your cup of tea, but I much prefer being able to just like move my cod piece if I need to, but it'll stay put when I want it to.
So yours is just sort of, is it attached in two spots, like at either end? At either
side? It is basically just glued to a belt.
Okay.
And it works like a charm. The other cod piece I wear is actually attached to the comma for that costume. And so I sewed the comma so that had this little, like maybe 4-inch flap of cloth that hangs down. And then I just ran some Velcro onto it. And then I stuck Velcro on the back of the cod piece. And you can just slap it on there. I've used bolts before. But the hanging cod, which is what I refer to that as, is also pretty good so long as you make sure that when you create whatever it's attached to, that it's positioned well. Because you only really get the one shot. And it'll bonk around a little bit when you're walking around. But if you have it set up properly, it'll allow you to have a lot more freedom. And it'll still look good for pictures. Those sorts of cod pieces can't have the wings, though. Like the standard Boba Fett one, where it's got the wings in the front. Mm. You pretty much just have to have that front sort of trapezoid shape. With the curve in it.
Okay.
If that makes sense to anybody.
Yeah.
Those are the two that I use. I've had other people use them. It works pretty well. If you're going to have a cod piece and you don't want to go for something crazy screen accurate or whatever, those are the recommendations. What have you got, Dar?
I go with the traditional boba thong style. I didn't originally go that way. My original cod plate was held on similar to yours. I used black elastic, which technically you're not supposed to use if you can see it. Mine is always covered up by belts and my comma and whatnot. So, you know, you can't see it. It works. Yep. But
I work, it would,
so mine was originally held on like that. But the problem with your cod plate being attached that way is if you squat down, your cod plate's going to flip up and it's going to look awkward. So
yeah, that's the problem that I'm running into personally.
So that's actually why I use what I use, the elastic cinching. It does not do that because it is just too thick. Like, so, it's 4 inches wide.
So what I did to combat that is I actually took another strap of elastic. And so I use a two-part epoxy that I get at Walmart. I don't know the name of the brand offhand, but any type of heavy industrial glue can work. So you have the I have the elastic strap, and I cut it to whatever like my belt waist is, minus a couple of inches for the cod plate, and I glued it one end to the inside of the right-hand side of the plate, looped the strap around to the inside of the left-hand side of the plate, and I have them glued down so they're not going to move. And then what I did is at the bottom of the cod plate, I used the two-part epoxy to glue down a strap of the elastic strap, which I stretched out just enough so it goes between my thighs and up behind, and then I looped it so it was looped around the waist strap, and it in effect turns it into the quote-unquote Boba Thong, and I've never had a problem with it since. The elastic allows me to shift it if I need to, say if I'm using the restroom, but it keeps it in place. It it makes your cod plate behave when you squat down, so it's not acting out of line. And for me, I didn't need anything more than that. I know some people would recommend maybe a single strap of Velcro just to keep it from sliding anywhere, but I believe if you keep your elastic short enough so that it's stretched and kind of like how Frost has his cinched against your waist, and you have your girth belt, which comes across the top of it, you know, your cod plate will stay pretty well secure. There's not a whole lot of tricks to go around with cod plate design, I guess.
All right. I mean, I honestly, I've been doing sort of the Boba Thong thing, but it does shift and things move, and, you know, I'm always very self-conscious about the positioning of my cod plate. So I'm going to have to try one or both of those methods, just see what works best. It's really the only thing that I'm unhappy with about the design of my current kit. Like, I want to have the cod because the current set that I have looks pretty heavily armored, so the loincloth on its own wouldn't really cut it appearance-wise. So the cod's a big necessity, but it doesn't sit right the way I have it rigged up now. All right. So the third and last question we have, and this is a pretty common predicament that Ryan here brings up. He says, so I'm a full-time college student who came to the realization that I can't build a kit and write term papers and intern at the same time. I'll be graduating in the spring and be taking time to focus on volunteer opportunities, like building my kit to join the Mercs. But my question is, how do you all balance life outside the Mercs and being in the Mercs? Kit building, staying active in the community, etc.
I never did. I never got. I was in the army, and if I wasn't, you know, doing army stuff, my entire life revolved around the Mercs. I was either building armor, I was looking for a troop, I was trooping with the 501st. You know, the first couple of years that I was in this club, there was no balance. I just went gung-ho straight to the end zone. But as the responsibility plate got heavier with the growth of the club, as we have so thoroughly covered earlier, and now to the point where I'm at now, I learned to keep my responsibilities first. But I always learned, real life comes first. There's no other getting around it. Either whether you're somebody all the way on top of the council positions, or if you're brand new, looking to build your first set of armor, wanting to get involved with the club, real life has to come first. And that's something that I think people need to remember. We're not really Mandalorians. We're people in a...
The armor's plastic.
We're
your helmet's
what?
A resin.
to
be fair, I wear metal armor, but...
But we digress. We're people doing this as a hobby. What a lot of people don't realize is the people who are in charge of things, they manage to do a lot of balancing by the sheer fact that this is our passion. This is what we love the most, and we make it a priority. Now, granted, real life has to come first, so there's a lot of people who get upset when certain things don't happen as fast as they'd like, such as the application process or the quartermaster corner, or, you know, various other things that involve people that have lives outside of the club. And I've always preached, as an LRAD, whenever introducing new people, you know, real life comes first. It has to come first, because if you don't take care of you yourself, your education, your job, your responsibilities, then anything that you put into the Mercs won't be effective, because you will be dropping the ball on your real, true life responsibilities. And as for being a student, trying to find the time, well, first of all, look to your local clan and find out when they're doing things. And if you're able to, it doesn't hurt if you take a long time to finish your costume. It sucks that you have to watch everybody race past you, but unfortunately, life is life. You have to deal with it. And your armor, again, it's a hobby. It's a background hobby. So do a little bit as you can, even if you're just putting down one coat of spray paint a day, or if you're cutting one piece of armor out over the weekend. A little bit of progress is still progress, no matter how you look at it. So remember, your real life has to come first, and then you fit in the mercs however you can. And once your real life, once you have it situated where you can balance more on your plate, then you can start getting involved in more and taking more responsibility into the club and growing with it. But always remember, your real life has to come first. I don't know any other way to say it. I'm sure you guys have different ways of battling it and dealing with it.
That was very well said.
Mm.
That part about you saying that real life comes first, though. Apparently I've been doing it wrong.
Yes, yes, you have.
No. I actually was pestering a friend of mine again, because we were sitting right around that not enough people to keep our clan status mark, which is 7, by the way, if anyone's wondering, since the Strongholds program rolled out quite a while ago. But no, he took either 4 or 5 years. I've known him for at least 5 years, and he was interested in becoming a merc almost immediately, and it took him that long, and he's not in college, hasn't been in for quite a while. And that's just sometimes how it goes, you know? But if you're committed to doing it, the mercs isn't going anywhere. We'll still be around when you do finish.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, beyond that, though, I'm not a great spokesperson for the balance.
I thought we had an expiration date at, like, 2020. I thought that's when our allowance from Lucasfilm was over.
Yeah, that's 2020 is when we are disbanding the club. Yep.
Everybody make sure to get as hard as you can on all of your merc stuff, because it's almost over.
Yep.
Game over, man! Game over!
Yeah, it's a bit of a different situation for myself, or anyone that sits on like multiple jobs or gives back to the mercs in a large way. But the way I look at that is it's just like if you were to volunteer for a charity organization, you're making time for that, but you always need to make sure that you're budgeting your time. So mm-hmm. You find the time to do other things. You know, I happen to enjoy 3D printing, but I have a 3D printer running in the background as we do the podcast, so I'm able to do both things at once. you know. It's just a matter, yeah. The finding the balance is gonna be a valuable thing to figure out, regardless of whether it's mercs related or just your general outlook on life and your goals.
Yeah, and for members that are already in the club, a lot of people are worried about getting burned out. You know, they're worried that they don't donate enough time to the club. And I can say this as an Alarad: if all you need to do is show up once a year, that's it. Like, as far as the club is concerned, your membership, the only rules we have are behave yourself, troop mm-hmm. once a year, and pop in on the forums every once in a while. That's it.
Yes.
That's all the commitment that we ask for you.
No, that's a pretty good point. Yeah. I had, I've seen people who retire, and then with that whole clan number thing, suddenly reapply. And I'm just looking at it going,
and it's only been
you retired
like,
less than 6 months ago.
Yeah.
You didn't even ride out a full year of just not showing up to stuff.
Yeah.
Like, help your clan out at least and leave the number count a little higher for a little longer.
Exactly. Because, yeah, like, same. I'm very lucky right now. I got a few new members, and I actually have, like, 4 or 5 really serious potential members. Like, this is something that mm-hmm. I never expected I would see as long as I was the Alarad. But, go me in my leadership style.
Yeah.
But, there was a brief period where I was having, a couple of my members were getting burnt out, they decided to retire because they felt that was what they needed to do, and I'm never gonna stop anybody who wants to step away. If you actually want to stop being in this club, that's fine. We'll always have you back anytime.
As long as you didn't get kicked out.
Right.
But, that takes a lot, though.
Yeah, so, it honestly does. It takes a lot to get kicked out of this club, and not showing up for 6 months isn't going to do it.
Some people might wonder where you've gotten to, but you know, if you just let them know, hey, I'm going to focus on some other stuff, fine.
And I guess I'll use a personal experience myself. I've been an Allerad for 6.5 years, and I've balanced a lot of things. And finally, I had to eat my own words and step down because I was getting burnt out, and I have some health issues that I have to address. So I've had to reprioritize my priorities. And unfortunately, the Mercs, I was not giving what I felt was the proper amount of attention. So I stepped down because that's how you balance your priorities. That's how you make the Mercs work for yourself. You realize what you can and cannot do. And I discovered, I recognized that I needed to step down because I wasn't able to balance my health issues and my life problems and our club and my clan. So again, it comes down to your priorities. You have to decide, like Faxo said, it's like any other charity organization or like I said, any other hobby. You will put into it what you want to put into it. If life only gives you so much time because you're currently going to school, unfortunately that's the way the cookie crumbles, and you just gotta make it work the best to your abilities.
Yep.
I think it's one of the things I've learned is it's hard to say no. Yeah. But saying no is sometimes the best thing for you and your, whether it's your mental health or your, you know, your situation. Because we have members in our clan, they've got kids. Some of them just got new jobs and just got moved to a weekend shift because they're the new guy or something, and they feel like they're letting the club down. And when I was Allerad, I told them, you're not letting the club down. You're taking care of yourself. And that's the most important thing, as Dar was just saying. You know, we want you to show up at every event that you can make. But if you can't, if you have to go to work, if you have to do an internship, if you have to go to school, do that first. You know, we'll be here.
Yeah, that first one. You don't have to take time off work to show up to events.
No.
You should kind of still get paid so you can afford to go to the other events.
Yeah.
in general, guys, in general, it literally says what we are on the tin. We are a volunteer charity costuming organization. Volunteer. Volunteer.
It is
costuming organization. We're not going to sit here and we're not going to like blackball you because you decided that you needed to, you know, earn some money so your children can eat. Like, we are not, and that's not the only thing. Like, I mean, I knew numerous people who have stepped down simply because they aren't into it anymore from various positions. And you know what? That's
totally
cool.
Fine. Yeah. Yeah.
We would rather you have fun.
And that's the biggest thing. Like, if say some random clan, say they've got 10 members and they got 5 members that are just feeling burnt out and they're not having fun anymore, what is the point? So take a break.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it.
As someone that went from doing several cons in a year, to someone that did almost no travel for cons and has barely participated in any events at all this year. I'm sure Sal is looking at me going, what happened? You used to troop all the time. Because my troop count has accumulated over the years. Just real quick. The troop count is a nice thing to look back on and reflect that all the awesome things that you've done. It's not a number to be like, ha, I have more than you. Because that doesn't matter at all. There's all sorts of types of troops. And every single troop is an awesome experience.
Yep.
But case in point, though, I've basically done almost nothing, and I went to my local con, and there was one con in which I was able to drive out and road trip with a friend, and it was the weekend before my local con. So I did 2 events in 2 weeks, and for the rest of the year, I've basically done almost nothing.
Except for, you know, all the freaking work you do.
Well, I'm referring to participating at events and spending time outside of sitting on my computer slaving away up till like 3 or 4 in the morning or whatnot. No, but sometimes you just have to take a step back and reprioritize. And here's the big thing, though. Every year, Dragon Con happens. Much as I'd like to, I can't always go to Dragon Con every year, especially with the dollar, the Canadian dollar, being absolutely horrendous compared to the American dollar right now. It was a whole lot better a couple of years back.
USA,
but there's always,
USA.
There's, but there's always another con, and there's always another event, and the Mercs will always still be around.
Mm-hmm.
In the moment, in the moment, it's going to kind of suck a little bit, but in the long term, there's going to be plenty of stuff to still participate in. So there's no rush. Take your time. It's all going to be good.
And if you are in a command position or an administrative position in the Mercs, and you get to that point where you do start feeling tired, you don't like doing the work anymore, you know, it's just not fun, you don't feel like you're putting in. Like we said earlier in this episode, it's very rare for someone to actually say, hey, I think you're doing a bad job, maybe you should stop. Like, that is incredibly rare in this club. It is almost always people stepping down voluntarily, and no one is ever mad.
Yeah.
We actually have, for a club our size, we have a very high turnover of leadership, and that's just because we like taking turns. Like Wampa Clan, I am the 4th Alarad for Wampa Clan. And there are some clans where they're still working on like their 2nd or 3rd. And there are clans who have gone through an Alarad a year or more, you know, and that's just how it works. So no one will be mad if you do make it to a position of quote unquote power, because there really isn't any in this club, trust me.
A what now?
Yeah, right.
Position of responsibility.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's really what
it is. It's a position of more work.
Yeah. It is not a position of power. No one in this club has any power. Ask if you ever
exactly
if you're ever
one
wondering
person as, has power.
And
as the guy that can technically ban people, I have a ton of work.
Yeah.
So it's at the very back of my mind. Not to mention, I don't really want to have to deal with that anyways. And there's a whole procedure that goes about through that sort of thing anyways. It's not like I can just sit down and go, ooh, let me just ban people.
Yeah.
Ooh, power. No. No, I'm too busy trying to keep the site running and bringing about new changes. I'm hoping in a couple podcasts I might be able to announce some cool stuff. We have some stuff in the works, and we should be getting pretty soon to be able to reveal some stuff. So
yeah.
But I'll just tease you all with that for now.
And yeah, there are plenty of people in this club where they're doing jobs where, like, me being an Alarad, like, the second somebody gets into Wampa Clan and actually wants to take over the Alarad job, I will give it to them. It's not a hard job. It's not a bad job. I just don't want to do it anymore. But my clan, being the sweethearts that they are, they just won't let me stop.
Is that what that is? Is that sweetheartedness?
Up here, I guess it is.
Or is it indentured servitude?
I don't know anymore.
Hard to tell.
It's both.
The line is very gray.
A little bit
gray,
of column A,
very blurry.
A little bit of column B, somewhere in the middle.
Yeah. Actually, while we're on the subject, since we're talking about how Raiden has joined up, as the newest member of the council, and Sal was previously the newest member, and so on and so forth. It's quite interesting to see if you've been sitting on the council for a couple years, just how frequently they actually turn over. I've seen some people that kind of go like, oh well, you know, how do we end up over up in that position? There's always at least one council position that is up for people to apply to every single year, if not more.
Yeah,
always. We've got 9 different council positions. So there's always someone who's got real life coming up, or someone who's put in their time and they're tired and wanting to get someone fresh in there. So
well, perfect example is the personnel officer. I mean, how many of those have we gone through
oh,
in the past
like
couple
seven.
Of years?
A grueling job.
Yeah. Like we've gone through quite a few members, and we've even had people like sort of fill in temporarily, like Pinocchio, one of our cast members here. He filled in on a couple of occasions as sort of the interim PO, and the second someone got elected, he gave them the job right back.
And again, that just kind of goes to show the not the power, but like you guys were saying, the level of responsibility that this club hands out on its members. It is very taxing, and it does. And the people who have learned to prioritize are the ones that take over those positions because of how much of a responsibility that they have to handle. So I think prioritizing priority and balancing your life in the club, it really comes down to it's a learning curve. I mean, I know as I learned coming in Alarad, you know, over the years, there's a huge curve of oh, wow, we have new responsibilities to pick up. We have new things we have to look into and be in charge of. And with the club growing so much, those responsibilities get bigger. So balancing just comes with your involvement and as you get deeper into it.
Well, and I think for this question, you know, he's talking about not any leadership position. He's talking about just being a general member or a recruit. It doesn't look like he's finished. What I always told my folks as Alarad was, I'll take whatever time you can give me. I would rather have you come drive the truck for us in a parade or stop by the booth for a couple hours before you go to work than necessarily have you try and rush through to build your kit. I'd rather you hang out with us. I'd rather you be part of the Mercs, even if it's not in an official member capacity. But just give me whatever time and whatever energy you can. I mean, I need that more than your money or more than you know, you having to worry about, well, I need to get $150 to buy a helmet or whatever. You know, come represent the club with us. Just do what you can.
Exactly.
And for some folks, it's an afternoon on a Saturday at a local convention. And for other folks, it's, hey, we're going to go build a jail cell on Saturday.
That exactly. A lot of people do their... It's not necessarily an illusion, because we don't really make too much of it, because we are so focused on our official members and what they can do and all the privileges of being in this club gives you. But our unofficial members can help out in so many ways without donating any money, without donating any materials or any services or anything, really. But like Vraiden said, just, you know, you can help us man the booth, you know, in your
time and effort.
Yeah. Like I have a few of my prospective members. They manned our booth at a recent convention while we were off getting our official member photos taken, because I mean, they're halfway through their build processes. They've been on the forums. They've read all the same stuff I have. They have the information. So it's just like, yeah, go ahead. Tell other people about it. You guys know what you're doing already. You're just waiting for, you know, if an adjustment to your plate so you can get official. So we love our unofficial members. So take your time being one. Like we'll wait.
Speaking of donating, though, just a friendly reminder: we are still about $1,300 short of our yearly operations fund. So if you would like to contribute in that regard to help out, we would more than be happy to receive that from you.
Yes.
We'll give you many thanks. if you just go on the actual... If you just go straight to mandolinmerch.org, the far right side of the top menu bar has support. You can click on that and get all the info you need.
Yes.
Thanks again. Thanks either way, in fact.
Yeah. If you want to donate, you have to. If you want to donate your time, you want to donate your money, whatever, we'll take it. We are not picky here.
Yep. Shameless. Some days
some days I'm just happy to have an unofficial member walk around and pick up stuff that I drop.
Right.
There's that too, yeah.
Because if I drop something, it's gone for good.
Well, if we're referring to unofficial members, let's just make it very clear as a big shout out that the handlers are probably the most important members of this club. I mean, it's a big deal when you get a official member status and all that, but the handlers who look out after us that are in armor, they're the real MVPs of the club. I mean, like Vraiden was just saying, if we didn't have somebody picking up after us, we wouldn't be very far in a club. I mean, there's usually somebody who's not an official member yet that's still working on their kit, doing whatever they can, scooping up all the fallen pieces at the back end of the Dragon Con parade. So, I mean, there's no harm in not having your armor done right out the gate.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I love you can tell when we've really hit the full scope of a topic when everybody's like, yep.
Yep.
Got it.
Yep. What he said.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and that's all we have.
Yeah, that's all Hoping we have for crow. Tonight. Yeah. Blah, blah, crow, bye. Frost, Daryl, the Canadian, Vraiden, yeah, but.
Thank you for having me.
We're going to do the actual outro, hold on.
No, that was. That, no, that was, we're that good. Was, all right, bye.
I call Daryl.
I think that's the first time I've heard my my actual name spoken by anybody from the club.
I've said, I've called you Daryl.
Surely I've called you Daryl.
Yeah, just not as openly, like on like the podcast.
Oh, okay.
Like,
oh, well, yeah.
Like,
not you just
like
called him Shirley.
I'm quite certain at least a couple times I've also called you Daryl because I've gone for Dar and then and extended it to be Daryl, so it's Daryl.
I don't know, just thought that was your Canadian accent.
Daryl.
Oh yes, sorry about that, eh?
Canadians can't handle complex words.
No.
Sorry, Daryl.
Saskatchewan is their longest word.
Yes. Saskatchewan.
But, yeah, like we said, that is all that we have for this month's edition of Kel Dobby Talk Radio. Again, I'd like to thank Vraiden for coming on. You've been
awesome.
Thank
you for having me.
You're welcome. Yeah, we'll try and have you on Pretty again cute. Sometime. This was great. And so on behalf of myself and Vraiden, Thaxos, Dar, Frost, thank you for listening. And this will be the last episode for this year. January episode is likely going to be our... I was going to say widely celebrated, but I don't know how widely celebrated our blooper reel actually
by
is.
Us.
So
celebrated by us.
Yeah, it's like narrowly celebrated. There we go. It's the opposite of widely, so that works. But yeah, January episode will likely be our blooper reel, which is just a nice collection of us screwing up more than usual, and a couple other little things that just wouldn't fit in the normal podcast while still being relatively family-friendly. So get hype for that, because I mean, after Rogue One, that's really the only thing to look forward to until next December when we get episode 8. So, you know, but again, thank you on behalf of everybody here, on behalf of Vraiden, Thaxos, Frost, Dar. Have a good one, enjoy the new year, and goodbye.
Happy holidays to you. Yeah,
adios.
Enjoy.
Don't break my forums.
This has been a production of the Mandalorian Mercs Costuming Club. To learn more about the topics discussed on this episode, please visit us at www.mandalorianmercs.org. The Mandalorian Mercs is a worldwide Star Wars costuming organization comprised of and operated by Star Wars fans. Star Wars, its characters, costumes, and all associated media are intellectual property of Lucasfilm and Disney. We hope you enjoyed the show and welcome your feedback. Visit our Facebook page or email us at podcast@mandalorianmercs.com.